I'll make do.
That's what we do.
Make do on up.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Imagine having to win over the girl of your dream every friggin' day. I'm Dave, joined by the co-host of my dreams that I've won over
every friggin'
week for the last 6 years, Mr. Ryan. We are Movies on Up, our tagline for this week. Imagine having to win over the girl of your dreams every friggin' day. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will win between 1 and 50 prize packages that may be your first one.
A friggin' prize package.
But this week, sometimes movies get moved. Sometimes it's after we record the episode, so it doesn't make any sense. Like when we do a Michael Keaton episode 3 months before The Founder comes out. This week we caught it, but we still didn't change it.
That would have required too much work.
Yeah, Anna Faris and Eugene O'Debrose or whatever do that awful Overboard remake that was set to come out this week, but now it got pushed back a few weeks into May. But we thought, forget about making a new episode.
And we have already teased the amnesia for this week,
yes,
so
we
thought
did.
We can't really rob you of that.
Yeah.
And we're lazy.
They are our favorite, I guess, amnesia movies or memory loss movies. I don't know how strict you were with the, did it have to be specifically amnesia, or could it be any type of memory loss?
I have to look at my list. I mean, the number 5, yeah, I would say it's amnesia. Yeah, I think most of them are probably that way. Now, some of them, I think the most common example of like amnesia is there's an accident and you're like, oh,
yeah,
I can't remember my name.
Yeah.
Not all of them are like that. Some of them are engineered amnesia to forget something.
Okay.
That one's not on my list.
Okay, I left that one off because that I
felt. But there's other examples of that that are on my list. Eternal Sunshine, not on the list.
Yeah.
That is the that we're talking about.
Is.
Yes.
The Colin Farrell one, obviously.
Certainly.
No, like I tried to
As
keep
if there was another one.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to just do, I feel like amnesia got such a bad rap for so long because I feel like maybe 80s and early 90s, there were a lot of amnesia movies, and it was just a lazy plot device to where I think it got to a point where people are like, oh, that's lame, I don't want to do it. So I feel like amnesia movies have gone, not necessarily gone away, but they've gotten a lot more creative.
Yeah, when they're done well, they're really good.
Yeah, and I mean, some of them may not be traditional amnesia, but when we say amnesia, I think, unless there's a memory doctor out there that's going to be like, oh, well, that's grade 3 rectal memory or whatever. Like, I don't.
Rectal memory.
Yeah.
I hope not.
He's seen some stuff. Anyway, on that note, he wishes he could forget everything. Ryan, forget this intro and move on to our number 5 favorite amnesia movie.
Why the hell don't we just start with Total Recall? Because that's where it is on my list. And it, of course, it is the Colin Farrell one. Nah, it's the Arnie one from 1990, directed by Paul Verhoeven, starring also Sharon Stone, Michael Ironside. As I've said before, as recently as I think last week or the week before, I do love Arnold action movies from the 1980s and even the 90s. I had mentioned Running Man before. That made my wrestler list over Predator because of the particular kind of Arnold that shows up in that movie. And Running Man and Total Recall are my favorites of the Arnold action movies because of the one-liner Arnold that we see, and also because I think they have the best stories. Total Recall involves Arnold using a purposeful amnesia-causing memory wipe to help either liberate the colony of Mars or maybe help its evil governor maintain his control. So we have amnesia where Quaid begins to realize that he's actually Hauser after attempting to have an artificial vacation memory planted in his head. So there's a lot of memory manipulation in this movie. We're never really sure what's real, and I'm not really sure there's ever been an actor with the ability to pull off that wide-eyed look of shock and surprise, like he's not sure what's going on, quite the way Arnold does, which fits the movie perfectly. If you can get past the cheesy one-liners, which I love, and Verhoeven violence, which I love as well, there are plenty of twists in the plot that would actually, if you've managed to not know anything about this movie, give you Arnie eyes.
it's one of those perfect storms that we talk about a lot. Like, I bring up Point Break, to where it's all these things that shouldn't work that just work and create kind of like a classic, not your traditional classic. This is like that. And I can understand wanting to... I'm dancing around it because I don't know... It's going to be a weird thing to say. I can understand wanting to remake this movie. I can understand the concept of a remake, because it was made at a time when Arnie was just doing these big dumb action movies like Commando and True Lies and stuff like that. It is this big dumb action movie, but this one has a lot of plot to it and a lot of story.
And it's the source material.
And a lot of cool stuff.
That and The Running Man, your material comes from two guys that are fantastic
writers.
Yeah,
exactly. So I get the idea of wanting to remake this movie to where it's not just a dumb Arnold action movie.
It's not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But they failed there, and the original is a classic. They dropped the ball on the Colin Farrell one. I don't hate his casting. Like, I think when you're doing that kind of role, I think somebody like Farrell is good, but it was bad. I'm not pro Total Recall remake, but I get it. It did not come close to the original, though. My number five, not a classic by any means, and not starring a star like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is from 1994, directed by Mick Jackson, written by Robert King, starring Dana Carvey. It is Clean Slate. You know, I wasn't nuts about Carvey on SNL, like Church Lady, is George Bush. I just didn't care about that stuff at that point in my life. Wayne's World was okay. I liked the Wayne's World movies better than the sketches because they were just insanity, like especially the second one, because it felt like they made it up as they went along, which they kind of did. But I liked Carvey in that kind of goofy straight man role, which he did well. Of his movie star, which I think other than the Wayne's World, you're talking maybe two movies, which is Clean Slate and Opportunity Knocks.
Master of Disguise?
Oh, Master of Disguise. Yeah, that one I don't like. But Opportunity Knocks, I think, is by far the best. But Clean Slate is actually really interesting and fun because it does take that action comedy. It does let him run free, and it's the same plot as 51st Dates, pretty much, the Adam Sandler movie that I hope isn't
that we have not mentioned yet.
Yes, it has not mentioned, but it's Drew Barrymore forgot every morning, and he
every
had to make her fall
day.
In love with her every friggin' day. Dana Carvey's a private eye who has the same thing, where every day he's got a 24-hour memory, so the next day he wakes up, he happens to be falling in love with Valeria Galino in the middle of a big-time murder case, so he's got a kind of leave himself notes, and it's similar to the plot of a movie that comes up a little later on my list that might be on yours as
it's
well.
It's not.
I figured it wouldn't be because you knew it would be on mine.
Yes.
But it's similar in that, but in a more comedic way, but in that 90s comedic way where their action was there. I like it. I like Dana Carvey in this and Opportunity Knocks. But yeah, Clean Slate. Let's remake it with Colin Farrell.
My number four is the part of the podcast that is sponsored by Rennie Harlan. I don't know why, but out of nowhere, we've just had a Rennie Harlan movie basically on every list we've done for the past month. It is not a gag. I wish it were, but in fairness, 1996 Long Kiss Goodnight is a good movie, and it fits the amnesia thing perfectly. It stars Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, and Patrick Maldehyde. Before Harlan took LL Cool J under the Deep Blue Sea, Harlan helmed a Gina Davis double feature. He had this and Cutthroat Island almost back to back.
One of the biggest bombs of all time.
One of those movies is better than the other. And I'm pretty sure that we've managed to put every other Shane Black written movie on a list somewhere. He's pretty over on this podcast. So if we're doing a list about amnesia, the Shane Black wrote one, it's probably going to be on here. Just so happens it was also directed by Rennie Harlan, who's just been on this show more than Dave and I have recently. Long Kiss feels to me a bit like a gender-swapped Shane Black version of a movie that's higher up my list. After washing up on a beach, Davis discovers that she's an absolute badass, and with the help of Samuel L. Jackson, she pulls at some threads from her past and uncovers like this James Bondian level villain plot, complete with governmental conspiracy on the side. I think it's a fun movie, and Gina Davis really does carry off the badass elements very successfully. Sammy Jackson plays a private investigator who's kind of along for the ride. It's a fun movie. She washes up with amnesia, discovers she's a badass. I think it's great.
Rennie Harlan.
That may come back later.
I almost want to do a Rennie Harlan episode.
We've like, done it.
He's got this insane. He did one of the worst Nightmare on Elm Street movies, the worst Die Hard movie of the first three. Those two, Deep Blue Sea, Mindhunters, which is terrible, The Covenant, that witch movie, 12 Rounds, which I brought up, the Cena episode. And he did this Devil's Pass movie that's on Amazon. Actually legit, like, thriller horror movie that takes place in the mountains. It's actually pretty good, and I just now realized it was Rennie Harlan because for some reason I was thinking he did Hurricane Heist, which I just saw, but I realized, oh, that's Rob Cohen. They're kind of interchangeable. So, yeah, I did see Hurricane Heist.
What happened to you? Did you get blown into the theater? We're like, I can't leave.
I saw it and Gringo back to back. Like, I do, I tried to do a double feature around my brother's anniversary.
Okay,
and,
fair enough.
He'd have loved Hurricane Heist because it was terrible. My number four, not terrible. I mentioned being one of the different takes on memory loss and amnesia. It is from 2007, written and directed by Scott Frank, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Jeff Daniels, and Matthew Good. It is The Lookout. This is when Joey Gordon-Levitt was in that run of just like really cool lower profile movies like this and Brick and people like 500 Days. I don't like it, but like he was doing these movies with directors that went on to do cooler things, and he was just kind of becoming this almost indie darling with a movie star quality to it. Like I remember those got kind of wide releases, but they still had that indie feel. And I mean, this starts, he has the tragic accident, and it's a memory issue. It's not your typical, like, oh, I'm trying to solve this crime, or I'm trying to figure out who I am. It's just, he's got memory issues since having an accident. A lot of it is him trying to adapt to that life, and trying to work a normal job, and trying to, and then getting reeled into this bank job by some bad people. And it's actually really good. It's really compelling. It's a different kind of amnesia movie. It's a different kind of bank robbery movie led by that cast. Good is really good, which you don't get to say a bunch. Daniels, Joey Gordon-Levitt, Isla Fisher, Carla Gugino, Bruce McGill, like Alex Borstein from Family Guy's in it. It's just a really good movie, and I like this Joey Gordon-Levitt. This is that era of Joey Gordon-Levitt that I really, really liked. And this is like one of the... You like Brick. I don't. I'm talking up Joey Gordon-Levitt from that era. I don't like Brick. I don't like 500 Days of Summer. But I like that phase
Hesher,
of his career.
That's another one that was in that phase. Although
Hesher was a couple years after, but it was in that,
right. That was certainly an indie feel. But him and Natalie Portman, that gives you some movie star quality there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to derivate too far from my number four, from my number three. It is the gender-swapped version. And I'm sure that's how everybody refers to the Bourne Identity as the gender-swapped Long Kiss Goodnight, Doug Liman's first one from 2002, starring Matt Damon, Franka Potenta, and Chris Cooper. Bourne, as soon as we see him, he's washed up in the Mediterranean, so he gets fished out with a couple bullet holes in his back. Can't remember who he is. I love me some Jason Bourne. I've been watching Bond movies for as long as I can remember, and occasionally 007 finds himself at odds with his government, but never quite the way that Damon does throughout the Bourne trilogy, or I guess now, if we don't count the Jeremy Renner one, the four movies, the quadrilogy of Bourne. His amnesia was brought on by these gunshot wounds that he's got, but from there, Liman takes Tony Gilroy's script and makes a really great... This is an action movie, but it's also a character study full of a lot of great action scenes. I think more than an action movie, it's a movie about Jason Bourne and who this man is.
An origin story almost.
Yes.
To you and him.
Right. You're both learning it at the same time. From the hand-to-hand combat in the Paris apartment, the insane car chases, and the really well-done shootout, in air quotes, with Clive Owen, Liman really, really keeps the movie moving. Part of the charm of amnesia movies is when we find out right along with the character. You mentioned the origin story that we're on that same track as Bourne is. And while his story is a little bit more convoluted than the rest, it's still a fun ride for us as we get a little more of the story, a little more of the story as he's able to uncover more from his past. To me, it seemed like the rest of the series just labored so much under the strain of having to continue this governmental cover-up that it almost seemed forced. But I think Bourne Identity, it's a bottle movie. It stands on its own. You can watch that one, walk away, And you and Lola are going to be much happier for it.
Yeah, it is a very good standalone movie that you can see building a franchise. If you don't know that the rest of them exist, like, you can watch it and be like, oh, I would watch Further Adventures of Jason.
You may want to rethink that after you watch them. But
yeah, and you know what? They got Greengrass. They could have done more with them, and they didn't. It felt like the same thing repeated three times, and Greengrass's directing style for that kind of movie was awful. I cannot watch Paul Greengrass movies, and it's
but
a shame.
Doug Liman's a fantastic action
director. The first one was great, and Doug Liman is way underrated as an action director.
Not on this show, though,
the
damn it.
The fight scenes in the first one, in Bourne Identity, are so good with the pencil and stuff. And like
the pencil, the newspaper, like the magazine?
Everything is so good and so detailed that you don't get that kind of action that much anymore. My number three, it's a hard movie to talk about, because it's a hard movie to follow and a hard movie to get, but it starts with Rufus Sewell waking up with no memory of who he is or what he's done, and also wanted for a lot of bizarre murders. It is from 1998, written and directed by Alex Proyas. It is Dark City. I think one of the most underrated sci-fi movies of the last 40, 50 years. Dark City, to look back on, is kind of a classic. If you were to show me this and Blade Runner and ask me which movie is more relevant like 20, 30 years later, I'm going to assume it's Dark City, because I feel it's a far superior, maybe not as stylized as that.
Certainly not.
But it did have its own look. Proyas is a very visual director. Yeah, it's dark, but he's dark and visual at the same time. It's very twisty and turny. Rufus Sewell, you don't see leading a lot of movies as leading man, but he's great in this movie, and he's got an amazing cast with William Hurt, Kiefer Sutherland, Jennifer Connelly, Ian Richardson, Bruce Spence, Melissa George. Like, there's a lot of a good cast in there. It's a twisty, turny story where he's trying to learn at the same time you are. It's a different take on memory loss and memory recovery, because there's a lot more to it than just, oh, he fell down, hurt his head, now he doesn't know who he is. There's way more to it than that. The Strangers are a very cool villain organization. It's just a really, really cool movie that I feel like holds up really, really well. If you haven't watched Dark City in a long time, watch it. This and Gattaca, I think, are two like really, really good sci-fi movies that came out around the same time that kind of just don't get mentioned in the breaths of like really good sci-fi movies.
I think there's a lot of sci-fi movies from the late 80s through the 90s, I think, that kind of get forgotten about. And Troll of Monkeys is one that we bring up a lot. This one, Gattaca. I mean, outside of The Matrix, most of the sci-fi stuff from that time period, unless it's sci-fi horror, doesn't get really...
And The Matrix kind of came at the tail end of that.
Yeah.
And maybe you could...
And that was because it was an action movie.
It was an action sci-fi movie, and maybe that's where we transitioned from there.
Yes.
And that when you think of that era, The Matrix is kind of the first thing that comes to mind. You don't think of the thinkers like Dark City and Gattaca.
Right. I think that's just an underappreciated era in sci-fi. Those movies are still being made. You know, in the 1980s, you still had Star Wars, you had Blade Runner, you had Alien. A lot of those things were still very relevant.
Because you can have sci-fi. I feel like now your good sci-fi is done on a smaller independent scale.
Yeah.
Because I feel like for some reason studios think sci-fi has to be a tentpole. Think of the major releases.
Sunshine and Moon are a couple of my favorite sci-fi movies. They're both tiny, tiny movies.
Yeah, and I mean, just you don't get a lot of Source Code got it. Even Adjustment Bureau kind of would fall into that. Like, but you don't see a lot of like, oh, here's a smaller sci-fi movie with a big star that's a wide release. Like, you're not seeing a lot of that now, which I think is a shame.
My number two, this one I know is not going to be crossover because it was made before 1980. It was made before 1970. It was 1964. I may have talked about it before. At some point, I've probably put every Alfred Hitchcock movie on a list. And if I haven't, I should probably go back and try and work the rest of them in. But again, when you're talking about Amnesia, Marnie from 1964 comes to mind for me. It's Tippi Hedren, Sean Connery, and Martin Gable. Speaking of 007, he shows up in Marnie as kind of a bad dude. Tippi Hedren, who was just off her starring role in the previous years, The Birds, has herself a bit of a case of the forgetsies here. She seems to be terrified of both thunderstorms and the color red. You add to the fact that she seems to be a compulsive thief, and in any other movie, she's probably the jerk. But when Connery finds out about the thievery, he uses it to blackmail her into marrying him, which is totally an overboard move, and then he rapes her on their honeymoon. But somehow, and my guess is because he's fucking Sean Connery, all that behavior is kind of okay. Admittedly, it's a fucked up story with a bit of a predictable ending, but I'm a shill for Hitchcock, and he made an Amnesia movie, so it was going to be on my list, and here it is at number two.
This was also my number two.
Bullshit.
No, I'm just joking. Yeah. My number two, it's more predictable from me, from 2000, directed by Christopher Nolan, written by him, based on a short story by his brother Jonathan. It is Memento, starring Guy Pearce, Joey Pants, Carrie Ann Moss, Mark Boone Jr. I talk crap on Chris Nolan a lot because I feel like he makes smart movies for dumb people, essentially. Like, I feel like he tries to make these real intellectual movies.
He does now.
But really dumbs them down. He did not do that with this one. Memento is one of the best screenplays I believe ever written. Like, one of the best, most original, most innovative, inventive screenplays ever, and then helps that he wrote it because with his directing style was very, very cool. I mean, you have the one timeline moving forward mixed in with the timeline that's going backwards, and again, it's not a straight up amnesia movie. He does know who he is, but he has short-term memory loss. He only has a couple minutes before he's has to remember everything again, and he remembers up until his wife died, so he has his memories from before then, but he can't create new ones after that. It's a very, very simple setup, kind of, to where a guy can't remember stuff.
It's a simple setup to a very complex story.
Yes, yes.
Complex storytelling.
Exactly. And this is the Christopher Nolan I like, because it's not dumbed down in any way. Where I feel like Inception and Interstellar, I feel like those were good premises that got dumbed down so much that, you know,
because those are studio movies that have to make a ton of money.
Exactly. And this, Following, I went back and watched Following after this, which I like. It was a little bit more of a mess. It was also nonlinear and didn't make as much sense. But this, he didn't invent nonlinear storytelling.
Right.
But I feel like he...
Nobody's ever done it better and not confused you.
Yeah.
This movie is tough to follow, but it would be impossible if it's not done correctly.
Yeah, and I feel like he kind of opened the door for nonlinear storytelling. I feel like we've seen it a lot more since 2000 than before, because he showed it could be done very, very well. Not just in movies, you see it in TV shows and stuff. And there's a lot of nonlinear stuff now, not as creative and not as original. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. But I feel like this movie was very, very groundbreaking because it did give us Christopher Nolan, who went on to become one of the biggest movie makers in the world. Even though I lost him, I liked Insomnia after this. But then since, I mean, other than the Batman movies, other than those, like, you know, without Memento, he doesn't get Insomnia to get into the studio system, which leads to Batman Begins. So I really, really like Memento, and I do talk a lot of crap on Christopher Nolan because I do feel he's incredibly overrated as a director, but you will never take away my love for Memento. And I get that that's a massive statement.
It's hard to say he's overrated.
I understand
when
that's a massive statement. I understand that, but to me, I don't feel like... I don't think he makes bad movies, but I don't think he makes these classic masterpieces that he's given credit for.
His stuff nowadays doesn't measure up to what we had gotten from Christopher Nolan in the past. I mean, Dunkirk could have been directed by anyone. I don't think that he left his fingerprints on it the way he did with Insomnia or with
the Prestige. I didn't hate the Prestige.
Yeah, I liked it. Those earlier movies for me, I don't think he's overrated. I just think that he's been maybe coasting on his reputation a bit. Now, I don't know if there's a vast difference between that and being overrated. It just feels more comfortable coming out of my mouth, being the fact that he was, you know, just nominated for Academy Award.
For a movie that anybody, that was a plug-and-play job almost.
Yeah.
I don't dislike him. I really don't. Maybe I hold him to a higher standard.
And you should.
And I have the same thing with Guy Ritchie because, you know, Lock, Stock and Snatch are two of the most influential movies to me ever.
And you know they're in there, so when he makes King Arthur, you're like, stop it. I know everybody's got to eat. They got to take studio. I understand
all
that.
You know what? Like, Sherlock Holmes movies, they're not bad.
Right.
King Arthur has moments that are like, in a different world, I could maybe enjoy this, but I just, they're not those movies. And Wes Anderson's the same. Like, Rushmore and Bottle Rocket were so influential to me. And directors grow up, and sometimes I grow up with them, and sometimes they grow up a different way than I do, and that's okay.
And sometimes they start making these smaller movies, then they veer off into the studio system. But occasionally we get them back. And we got the director of My Number One back. It's got some non-linear storytelling. It's Danny Boyle's Trance from 2013, starring James McAvoy, Rosario Dawson, and Vincent Cassel. This movie is hard to talk about without completely ruining it. So stay with me the best you can on this. As with Total Recall, you've got some willful brain manipulation for an intended purpose. While it's not Schwarzenegger memory wiping himself to infiltrate a group of Martian rebels, McAvoy's Simon is just as determined to forget something. He'd like to forget the fact that he's a degenerate gambler before it causes him some real trouble, but spoiler alert, it doesn't work all that well. After winning his Oscar and doing 127 hours, this felt like a return to Danny Boyle making a Danny Boyle movie. It's super stylish and anything other than straightforward. If you like Sunshine, and we talked about that a month or so ago, or you went back and checked it out, try Trance too. I think it's Danny Boyle making a heist movie, making a Danny Boyle heist movie, with a side of memory augmentation.
Yeah, this is also my number one, which I don't think is any surprise. If I can put Danny Boyle on the list, he's probably going to be number one. This one I feel like went under the radar because
you did have
Slumdog Millionaire. He wins 127 hours. He's nominated. He's this big-time Oscar director now. He does like a low-key bank heist movie with McAvoy, which I really, really love this movie. And I feel like it's similar to Memento in a way to where it gives you something that you're not expecting in a memory loss movie. And going back to what I said at the very beginning, that in order to make memory loss work, you need to be creative with it. And I feel like Trance does that really, really well. Although it's not written by Alex Garland, it has a lot of the elements that I love about 28 Days Later and Sunshine, which are two Danny Boyle, Alex Garland movies. It's got that sense of urgency that, you know, no matter how big the story is, like Sunshine obviously and 28 Days Later were obviously on bigger scales, but this, you feel the stakes, and also like, who's the villain? Like, is it the memory loss? Is it the, it's got
it's open that, for interpretation.
It's open for interpretation.
Anybody?
Yeah. Vincent Cassel, who's one of the best villains out there. Inaudible wink. But it's a really, really fascinating movie. It's McAvoy, I think, at his best.
This is peak McAvoy
it's
time.
Very
this and
good.
Filth were almost
this
back
to back.
And Filth
and Welcome to the Punch, like all in these were the McAvoy turn. Like this was all in a span. Rosario Dawson is
just great.
I love her in everything, and she really bears it all in this one. You get peak Rosario Dawson. It's so good, though. I mean, the combination just of that cast. I don't care the plot. If you tell me Danny Boyle's directing a movie that stars McAvoy, Dawson, and Vincent Cassel, I don't care what the plot is. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be excited to watch it. And he pulled it off, and I absolutely adore this movie.
This is a movie that's very much a kind of movie that Dave and I like, and we talk about an awful lot. But I did think it was worth putting on the list because Memento is one that I think people know about. Christopher Nolan's a very well-known director. So is Danny Boyle at this point. Maybe not as much as Nolan.
And I feel like
he hasn't done a
you have
Batman
two,
movie yet.
Two kind of different Nolan fans. You have people that loved Memento because it did make an impact that have followed him since. And then you have people that fell in love during the Batman years that went back. So, I mean, he's got that too, where Danny Boyle, I don't know that his 127 hours and Slumdog Millionaire fans have went back to Trainspotting and all that stuff. So
no, I don't think so, but certainly, you know, we have been on that train since, if not Trainspotting, certainly like 28 Days Later, Sunshine, right
Life
through
Less
there.
Ordinary.
Yeah, but Trance to me was one that I don't think people know about, even from a guy like Danny Boyle. I don't think people know about it, so it had to be on my list. I'm not surprised there was crossover. And if it was going to cross over, realistically, the only place it would be number one. You know, as far as also-rans, I left Memento off because I knew it would be on your list, and I knew you wouldn't have Marnie, so I was like, ah, that's a good point to put that in. I think Eternal Sunshine absolutely belongs on the list. The problem is, I've talked about it a couple times, and I would have had to have kicked off Long Kiss Goodnight, and I just didn't want to do that for this list.
Yeah, Finding Nemo.
Yep, that's
another one. Was one that was on a mile.
Or maybe even Dory specifically.
Yeah, but of the two, I think they're both relevant, and I think Finding Nemo is by far the superior movie.
Oh, certainly.
The Majestic, it's an underrated Jim Carrey one. Like, it was in the Jim Carrey once an Oscar phase.
Yeah.
And the weaker of them, it's not Truman Show, it's not Eternal
it's
Sunshine.
It's the weaker of the Amnesia Jim Carrey movies.
Yeah, but it's entertaining. And this is one of those where I'm sure we missed them. Like, there's so many.
Just forgot all about them.
Yeah, there's so many Amnesia movies that I'm sure we overlooked some. We won't overlook 420 next week when Super Troopers 2 comes out, the latest from Broken Lizard, J. Chandrasekhar and company. So we are going to go back. Do you know this movie was from 2001?
I do, because I remember it came out when I was in high school.
I did not realize that. I did not realize this movie was 17 years old. We are doing a Super Troopers episode next week.
That doesn't make you feel old.
And I'm very, very excited about that. We got Super Troopers next week, and then things start rolling in. We got our summer preview.
No pun intended.
Yeah, we got our summer preview coming in. We're actually going to do Avengers Infinity War the week after it comes out, since they bumped it up a week. And then after that, we have our six-year anniversary show, which is still TBD on what we're going to do.
Something.
Then that kicks us into summer, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. Usually there's a lot of good episodes in summer because there's a lot more movies to pick from. And we're going to try some different things this year too, kicking off year 7. But we'll be back next week as we hit the road for our Super Troopers episode. And until then,
keep it up.